Hey, listeners, did you know that Yogi Triathlete offers endurance coaching for body and mind? We offer personalized training plans for endurance sports, wellness and mindset, nutrition and recovery guidance, and race preparation and strategy, all within the supportive community of Team Yogi Triathlete. So if you're ready to conquer your fitness goals and push your limits, our endurance coaches are ready to guide you on the journey to peak performance. Go to yogitriathlete.com today to set up your free 30-minute discovery call and embrace a future of strength, stamina, and achievement. Your goals, our experience, the perfect match for unstoppable success.
It's really easy to say, like, you just really have to believe in yourself. But it doesn't have to be, like, the biggest aspiration and goal. You can start a little bit smaller and just show yourself, like, yeah, I can make it to the pool today, even though I didn't feel as great when I woke up. Or, yeah, I can hit this run splitter or these watts on the bike and just kind of start a little bit smaller, because that compounds over time and can really bring out the best in the long term. And soon enough, I mean, you'll find yourself in a position where, as long as you look back on the progress you've made, you will believe in all your goals and aspirations and truly believe in yourself. It's a big confidence gainer.
And I think it really, really helps having something you're extremely passionate about. Like, I think a lot of people get caught up in, like, they just don't really have a focus other than, well, I'm supposed to make money or I'm supposed to do this and this. But, like, if you really have something that you feel so strongly about and you're just something that makes you really happy, whatever that is, having that as your, like, purpose helps you kind of, again, make everything just fall into place. Just focus on that and what makes you, like, brings you true joy, and then everything else just kind of works out, truly.
Welcome to the Yogi Triathlete Podcast. We are your hosts, Jess and BJ, and we're thrilled to be talking with power couple Mitch Ott and Caroline Kaplan, who are embarking on their first year as professional triathletes. BJ found their YouTube channel Rise and Try a few months ago, and we've been following ever since. Their honest accounts, relationship nuances, and dedication to training are all on display as they share generously about what it looks and feels like to be burgeoning professionals in the fast-changing landscape of triathlon. Sometime during their successful 2023 racing year, which included Caroline's win at the USAT Long Course Triathlon National Championship at Clash Daytona, and Mitch's second place podium finish, which he earned by breaking the 4-hour barrier, they decided that 2024 was the year to take the leap. We're going to dive into this decision process and their visions for the future as they navigate the day-to-day of being a couple with big dreams. That said, Mitch and Caroline, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you guys here.
Hi, thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah, thank you. I think I was talking with Caroline and we were, I think, most excited about the intro.
What are they going to say about us?
Well, and that will just continue to build and build and build as you guys pursue your dreams and achieve what's possible, which is anything. So that's just going to get better and better as time goes on.
Yeah, that resume keeps building and building. And I think, I know we've had guests on who, after they hear the intro, they're like, do you mind coming with me everywhere I go to introduce me as I enter a room? That's when we just started, because we started to do them with our guests on the show versus doing it post-production. So you guys get to hear the amazing things that that you've accomplished. And I want to start this. I binge YouTube a lot. I'm on the trainer a lot, as it looks like you guys are as well. But hopefully that's changing as the weather turns. But yeah. I want to pull upon a post you did on March 8th. And I'm going to read it for our audience because I think it really sets the tone. Anticipating an exciting racing season ahead, soaking in every moment as we live out the dream, the unknown of what the future holds for us in the sport of triathlon is both intimidating and thrilling. But we thrive in a position where we have nothing to lose and everything to gain. Can't wait to get this season started. So with that, what are you guys super excited about in living this dream of yours?
I think kind of seeing what is possible. I think we made the leap, you know, very recently, and we truly just don't know how everything's going to go, but we just kind of figured why not. And we're just going to go for it and see how it goes. But that's what I'm excited about too.
Yeah. I think we're in a position right now where we don't have any expectations of how we'll perform once we start racing against the rest of the professionals. We're, of course, gearing ourselves up the best we can and doing the training to, you know, put ourselves in a position where we can perform well. But there is just that unknown. And I think that's one of the more exciting parts about it is you are just, yeah, going after what you're not necessarily, there's no answer there, I guess. But you're trying to build out like what our brand is and how we're going to end up performing, you know, in a professional environment, which is just unlike the age group field. I think in the age group field, we found ourselves just kind of like at certain times, we didn't know where we were in the race. You don't necessarily like we're a little bit out in front. She always raced and had no idea where she was in the relation to the rest of the women in the field. So the racing dynamic itself is going to be entirely different. I think more so for her than me. But yeah, I guess there's just no real, like we have no idea how it's going to play out. So it's just excited for what's to come and learning more about where we sit in this world of triathlon.
And as you guys make this jump from age group to professional, and we've talked to many professionals about this jump, you know, new professionals, professionals who have been in for years. What is something that you're like, oh, I got to like either dial that in or hold that back or, you know, take that to the next level? Like, is there something where you're just like, okay, I know me and this is the thing that I've got to really get squared away?
I think for me, for sure, the swim start and being a lot more aggressive. And I think with the age group field, I always found myself just getting really comfortable in the swim. Like it was, I didn't have to work that hard and it was plenty enough, I think. And now I think it's going to be completely opposite of that. Like that's where the race is going to absolutely start and make or break you. So just trying to make that first pack and just, again, being a lot more aggressive, you know, starting with everyone, not just not knowing where I am, like he said. So that's definitely the biggest thing, I think, for me that I'll be focusing on.
Mm. I think we've talked a lot about really making sure that we're absorbing the training and recovering. I think that's been a really key aspect of kind of what we've had to focus on, just because training volume and intensity is higher than what we've done before, especially last year. And it's pretty necessary to get the most recovery, because balancing training with work and just everyday life, sometimes it's hard for us to have that time to really kick the feet up and absorb all the training that we're putting in.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the recovery just a little bit. Side note, like what is it that you guys are doing maybe that you were able to get away with as an age grouper, but now you need to, is it the boots? Is it the nutrition, the hydrate, the sleep? Like what is it you guys are really, you know, trying to get your arms around?
Yeah. I think probably just letting myself stop for 5 seconds is like the biggest thing for me. I think, you know, forever, I've just always had that mindset of go, 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 go. Like if you're stopping, then you're not doing something right. And I think, I've just, for some reason, I've always had that mindset. And so like almost like taking a seat or resting is like a weakness, and that's so not true. And so I think just, letting myself stop and literally just sit down for like an hour is something as simple as that, that I never used to do, has been something I'm working on and allowing myself to just like chill out.
Yeah. I want to dive into that just a little bit, because I think that people can really resonate with it. I remember a time in my life where it was, you know, I didn't even realize that I wasn't stopping, mm-hmm. right? You're just going. And I still have to use my willpower to slow down because it's so easy to get caught up in that. So are there times where you are kind of like, is there self-talk like, okay, Caroline, like just sit, like, don't get up. Like, are you kind of like Absolutely. Talking yourself off the ledge in that way?
A lot of self-talk and a lot of Mitch talk. He helps me like chill out a lot, like, and lets me know like, it's okay to stop. Like, you need to stop. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. I do. You're right. So, definitely a lot of self-talk and just kind of like reflecting on what my goals are. Like with work, I've always had a full-time job plus a part-time job. And now I'm just having, you know, I work full time, but it's a lot different in what I do. It's like, I'm an Orange Theory fitness coach. And so I work full time technically, but it's different. It's like shorter hours. I coach 3 to 4 classes in a row, but then the rest of the day I'm not working. So I coach 12 classes a week right now, and that's considered full time, but it's an extremely high energy job. So then I try to I piece my week and my training sessions like around that, but then on certain days that I don't coach, I try to make those more like chill out days. And so I've kind of, you know, started to do that a little bit better versus just continuously go nonstop all day as best
have
I can.
Have you noticed any benefits from it? Have you either mental or physical, any benefits from really using your strength to do what intellectually, you know, you need to do, which is stop every now and again?
Yeah, definitely. Both physically and mentally. I think just knowing, like, on the days that I'm telling myself, like the day before, like allowing myself to take that day as a more recovery focused day helps, and having that mindset going into it helps a lot. And then, yeah, physically I feel better by doing that the next day. So, I mean, even this past weekend, it was a really big, long training weekend, and I had a lot of fatigue built up in a good way that, like, I felt like, you know, that's going to happen. And, I just needed to, it was no injury related thing, which I was happy about, but it was just true fatigue. And so then today I went in knowing like, I'm going to take this day a little bit more like easier. Whereas normally I would have just tried to sleep it off and then go again. So, yeah, I guess both mentally and physically, I've seen that shift and my body's responding a lot better to that.
Good
how
messaging.
How about you, Mitch? What's there to work on your side? Where's Caroline coming in and showing you?
Fueling during.
Yeah. I guess, you know, my background kind of being in a little bit, I was a rower throughout high school and college. That's what I grew up doing. I didn't really have any experience with swim, bike, or run. So coming into the sport, one thing I really like pushed off to the side was nutrition. I mean, that's just aspect of the sport that I wasn't aware of, especially towards the beginning. So even now, I think now I'm starting to get a hold of it. But that is one thing that I've neglected in the past, and I've seen some major changes positively just by having a focus on that. And that leads into the recovery aspect as well. You know, I'd get done with sessions and still have, you know, a bottle and a half left of liquid nutrition or gels left over. And, you know, you look back on the session, you question like, why didn't it go well? Or I feel awful. So, you know, even just the mental aspect and it lets you down if you look at your performance on that day. So now I'm much more positive throughout training and able to actually perform throughout training, and it helps, like I said, with recovery for sure.
And you've got that stack of bananas always at the ready on your
that's right
your counter.
That's right.
Yeah, which we panic is the perfect. If we get down to like 4 bananas, like, how are we gonna make it?
I know. Peter's like, I gotta go to the store. I'm like, why? He's like, we need bananas. I'm like, there's like 6 on the counter. Those are gonna be gone by tomorrow morning.
Exactly.
So Mitch, like, with this is so interesting, right? Again, like, I think another theme that is so relevant to athletes not fueling enough, especially if we're talking about athletes going from short course, now they're going into long course, And you just can't, you cannot let that go by the wayside. You're not going to have longevity in the sport. You're going to have terrible races. Like, you might eke away and get away with it a couple times, but especially if you're young, but over time, you're going to pay the price. And so what I'm thinking as you're talking, and tell me if I'm wrong, but like, when you're rowing, you're not taking in, I'm thinking you're not taking in nutrition. So actually what you're doing is like, you have to rewire your brain. Like, you have this neural pathway that says, when I train and I compete, I'm not fueling, because you're just on, like, there's no hands off the oars. Right. And so, what are some techniques that you've used to get this nutrition, to get it down, like literally get it down?
Yeah. I mean, you're right. You got it exactly. I mean, with rowing, it's very robotic. I mean, if you're in a boat with seven other guys, there's no stopping. You're 100% all the time. You have to have confidence in the rest of the people that you're with, that you're going to pull your weight. And I mean, of course we have rest periods, and that's when we would get in our fluid, but we never looked at that as a opportunity to fuel. So, you know, really during training now, in the process of me just learning how to get the fuel in the body, I think it's a matter of really listening to how I feel. And, you know, if I'm like paying attention to the body before the session even starts, am I going to need fuel early in the session? Like, if I'm doing a 3.5 hour, 4 hour bike ride, am I going to need to start fueling during that first 30 minutes? Can I push it to 45? At what point am I going to need to start fueling, and really planning it out, I think, and just having set targets of time for when I need to take nutrition and how much, essentially. And yeah, again, that was just something that I always neglected, and my mind just went straight past it. And so realizing that the effect of getting in nutrition and absorbing that is a huge benefit to training and performance.
Coming from the rowing background, as you are probably aware of Cam Werf, coming from a similar pattern, what have you seen coming into triathlon? Like, what has come back into your memory of like, oh, I'm strong here because I was rowing, or I feel like my endurance is really, like, I have a big foundation because I rowed. Like, are you feeling anything that you can attribute to that time as a rower?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would like to say I'm very thankful for the opportunity that I had with my college coach. He was very big into the mental aspect of the sport, because we're in oftentimes in very uncomfortable situations, and you're just never, like, you can't rest, right? There's not a lot of opportunity to stop and rest, and kind of like we were saying earlier. But I rode in like Northwest Pennsylvania. It was frigid, right? Super cold. So we'd be out on the lake on an early morning around 5 o'clock, and, you know, you might be rowing and get splashed with water, and it's just freezing cold, and you just have to kind of ignore the elements and keep trucking, right? So I would say just the mental callus that I built with rowing, and just, you know, when the going gets tough and when the pain starts to seep in and you get that lactate buildup, in any uncomfortable situation, whether it's elements, again, how you feel, maybe even race dynamics that you're not necessarily comfortable with. It's just about kind of tuning into what I like to say is just doing your job, sticking to your plan. And yeah, you kind of allow that to go to the back brain and keep moving forward.
And with rowing, I think one thing that was really big for him was, like, he didn't have a swimming background, but he had such good feel for the water, and he's picked up swimming as an adult in less than a year, and he's already way faster than me, which is so annoying. But I think he has, like, that was from rowing probably, because, mm-hmm. I mean, he grew up in Florida around water all the time, but I think it was rowing that really made him, like, able to be a good swimmer quickly. even though it was
When you think about the muscles you're using for rowing, like they have, they're so activated with like naturally within you, Mitch, right? So when you swim, those are actually like the muscles you want to be using when you're swimming, as opposed to like the little bitty little deltoid muscles that a lot of people will use, right? And they're not using like their lats and their like those retractor muscles on the back. Caroline, as a swimmer, I'm sure you've spent many hours staring at the black line. And I know you're a runner as well. I think you started running in college, but swimming specifically, anything mindset wise that has been to your advantage moving into, you know, this first year as a professional triathlete?
I would say breath work has been really helpful with swimming, and like, cause I didn't do a lot of open water swimming. That's definitely been a new thing. So I had a lot of background in swimming. It was never my like main sport, but I mean, I loved it from day one as a child, but I think what's really been a difference for me has been, I guess I said breathwork, but there's a lot of things, like a lot of just technique things in general with swimming, like that I've started to do a lot more now that I didn't used to do. Just trying to take it to the next level, I guess. But one thing is definitely breathing well. And I learned that a lot through yoga too. And like having, when I start to get panicky, like big exhale breaths and, but then also just taking a step back and focusing a lot more on technique that I didn't used to do much at all. Like it was a little bit, but it was kind of just natural and what I always did. But now I've taken it back to, you know, focusing on form days and actually learning how to like what the technique should be. Whereas before it was just kind of truly natural, just whatever I did. And so I guess a lot of that, I don't know, that's what I've kind of been taking into the season. Cause again, the swim for me is going to be, I think, a big part of like the pro field versus the age group field. I think the big difference for me.
And when you talk about technique, just for our audience, like, because there are endurance athletes and they all want to get better too. Are we talking like single arm drill, six kick and glide? Are we talking like fast starts and being able to control the heart rate that you're going to experience when you get out into the race experience? Like how are you focusing? How do you describe technique?
Yeah, I think a lot of all of that, but once a week, at least I have a fully form focused day. So it allows me to kind of switch my brain off. Like time doesn't matter. Don't focus on that. Focus on actual technique. So yes, drills. Like I do a lot of DPS, like distance per stroke drills, trying to get like just reach, like really work on swimming like I'm really tall, you know, and like reaching farther and then able to like slow it down using more, you know, the muscles that I'm supposed to use and the pull and the catch. And so I think that for sure, which also then allows you to work on breath and then timing the kick better. And so then all of the things kind of come together. But then when I do go into my speed sessions, really try to think back to that form day and then, you know, put it into when I am trying to go faster. But then another thing, like you mentioned, the, you know, like takeout speed, like working on maybe if I did say a set of like 150s where I take the first 25 sprint and then the rest like threshold, and trying to, that's where I really focus on breathing, because you get all panicky and then trying to still swim fast, but at a more comfortable fast pace while you already are like, you know, hypoxic. And so just focusing a lot on just trying to relax and not get all flaily and focus still on form while you're really, really uncomfortable and out of breath has been a lot of help for me too. But truly just thinking about it more, like going into each session and having maybe a focus of that day has been helpful for me.
And do you feel as, now you guys first year professionals, do you feel like that has gotten more acute? That's like purposeful workouts, not just doing workouts to do workouts.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one thing with the swim too, is we just swim a lot more. So it allows us to have certain days to focus on certain things. Whereas like as an age grouper and you're not training as much, you may only swim 1 to 3 times a week. And so then each session becomes a little bit more like, I guess we'll, you know, do more speed work. And then you don't really have time to focus on the little things and taking it back to the basics to be able to get faster. So I think that's been helpful, just swimming more, and more focused sessions.
Yeah, repetitions in the pool has helped us a lot. I mean, I feel personally, if I miss a day in the pool, not miss a day, but if I have a day off in the pool, it's just, I don't have as much feel for the water. You kind of lose a sense for, you know, how to, move through the water, and just being consistent helps maintain that feel for the water. And then you can manage your time better throughout each session individually throughout the week. So kind of like, as Caroline's saying, if we have a form focus day, if we have speed work day, if we have, different focuses water for each swim, which I think has been ideal for our progress in the water, from, last year to this year.
What's your, what do you guys love? What's a fun set you guys like to do in the pool? Like, what do you guys get jazzed about? Or is it like, oh God, every day, same thing?
I actually really like hundreds, like just doing a lot of hundreds, trying to stay consistent. I really like the consistency of sets and trying to like nail it every single time. I guess those, a lot of people hate those, but I love like two sets of like 10 by 100. So, a lot of those.
On short recovery, like,
yeah,
10.
Short recoveries.
Yeah.
I'm not much for the top end speed work. I love the longer interval. It must be the rower in me, but a 10 by 400, I love that workout with, also a short recovery, but around that threshold, high end threshold.
Today I had 10 by 300s and those can sometimes be daunting, but it was descending like 1 through 5 and then descending again 6 through 10. So it's a lot, like instead of thinking about like 10 of them, you're like just focusing on each one, just a 5, and then you get to kind of reset mentally. And yeah, I like the descending too for that reason.
And you guys are, from your YouTube video, you literally live like across the street from the pool.
Across the street, yeah.
So anyone who's like, my God, how do they get to the pool? Because that seems to be such a barrier. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. But however, I did see in one of your videos, you were like, okay, we're going to go to the pool. And there was a storm coming. And then you like turned around next to the scene. You're like walking back. You're like, okay, the pool is closed because of the weather. But then you got in the car in the snowstorm and you found another pool. So there's always a way. Yeah. So you guys are in Nashville. Why Nashville? Why are you there for your training and your living as professional triathletes?
So I guess to take it a step back, and I'll get to your question, but I grew up in Florida, Central Florida, after college, moved back to Florida. I had graduated in 2020 during COVID and kind of those were the options at the time. Moved back into home. I was actually coaching rowing at the time and we met at the pool that we trained at back in Florida. She had just moved from Lexington about a year prior. And for the 3 years that I was back home after college, my goal was to move away and find something else to explore, explore a new life essentially and make some changes. That's just what I was eager to do, which I gave up a very, I loved coaching. I loved the kids that I worked with. And that was something that was very, very tough to leave, but essentially I needed the change. I think for me, not only was it just moving away from Orlando, and that kind of has some catalyst to it with family relationships, but it's also a better opportunity to train here. I think the training in Orlando, it can be okay. You have to kind of travel to find some hills if you need hills, but the heat, humidity, it's tough summers. Just kind of finding a new place to train was ideal. We also found Working Triathlete, which is the club that we train with and race with. And that's where both of our coaches are. That's their club. And there's a bunch of different athletes on the team here. A few other athletes are also going pro this year. And it's just a great community to be a part of. They're very welcoming, and we found that it was super comfortable to just make the move.
Yeah. I've seen, some of the videos of you guys at your track workouts and I'm like, okay, there's some pretty legit athletes that they're training with. So I'm like, is this like a secret little hub, little triathlete hub?
No one's supposed to know that.
It's like Boulder, San Diego, Tucson, and
Nashville.
Yeah, with working triathlete, this 2023, they started an elite development team. So working triathlete is a huge community, but then specifically the coaches put out applications for an elite development team for people who had either just gone pro or were planning to in the next really, really soon. And so he found that first and then told me about it. And then I applied too. And that's kind of how that happened. And then the idea was to get more people in Nashville. It wasn't a requirement to move, but I think we were just kind of in a position where he really wanted to get out. I had nothing to lose. And so that's how Nashville happened. We were just like, we'll just make the jump and move there and be in a, surrounded by people who are going to train and have, some sessions and just kind of start fresh with a new life and pursuing this goal, kind of going all in.
Tell us a little bit more about the elite development team. I know you guys have you'll have meetings and, how does that work? And is there additional support that you guys get by being a part of that? What does that look like?
Yeah, so our coaches, for one thing, it's great to have, we kind of have different coaches. So they're both part of Working Triathlete, but one's local in Nashville, one's local or lives in Cleveland. That's her coach. But my coach also helps her out here in Nashville, just having someone kind of on deck, per se. So at track workouts, if we go for rides, just having that feedback firsthand. That's a lot of help on its own. They also have provided help in contacts with different brands. So we, as a club, have different relationships with certain brands, Precision Fuel and Hydration and so on, where we can, of course, present ourselves as new pros and kind of offer to build a relationship with them. And then just the community aspect on its own, ideally having, other high-level athletes to train with and just kind of work with each other and, maintain that competitive aspect. Although it is, an individual sport, we kind of work as a team to improve each other and kind of push each other day to day. So it's not like we're training with everyone every day, but at least once or twice a week.
Yeah.
And then more so...
Once it gets warmer.
Once the warmer weather comes. To be outside and meet up around Nashville and go for rides or brick workouts or track workouts, and even meeting up for different swims as well.
Talk about the competitiveness. What has, Mitch, what have you learned from Caroline? And Caroline, what have you learned from Mitch in this training, in this starting to become professionals? Well, you guys have probably been training before that. So how do you bring out the best in each other?
I would say Mitch helps me chill out a little bit. That would be, I'm very like I was saying, go, 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 very type A and he is in some ways too, but, just learning to kind of relax. And I'm like the really loud one and the super high energy all the time. And I think having someone to help me just chill out a little bit has been really helpful too.
So if you're swimming together in separate lanes and you've got a set to do and Caroline's supposed to stick to a 120 or one whatever, and she sees Mitch coming by, what happens there?
For this reason, I'm glad we have different coaches and we actually don't have the same sets, because that would probably, I would get so competitive. But I think I actually try to ignore him completely in the pool. And I think when we do, if we ever do the same sets, which isn't very often, I think it does help push me for sure. But otherwise, I try to just ignore him because, I'll get a little too competitive and then I'm not getting the purpose of my set because he's just faster and I've just come to accept that.
How about you, Mitch?
Well, I've found we will talk about like a lot of last year we did very similar races aside from two. So we both raced Chattanooga, 70.3 Ohio, and then Daytona.
Yeah.
Clash Daytona at the end of the year. And going into those races, we always talk about, all right, let's go, both go for the win. Yeah. We'll be the true power couple and
every time
win the race. And
she's held her end of the deal.
And for me, it's been a tough pill to swallow. So, yeah, it's great. I mean, I always tell her, like, you know, she's going to crush it. She has everything in that she needs to perform really well. And that, I think, alone motivates me. It's like, you know, I kind of have to hold up my end of the deal if we both commit to really, really going after it. So it is kind of unique that we're both in different positions. Of course, racing in different fields, but how well can we perform in our respective fields is kind of where I find that we're most competitive. So it's fun.
Where are we going to see you this year? Do you know what your race schedule is?
Yeah, our first race is in St. Pete, Florida, St. Anthony's. So it's an Olympic distance. So that's how we're starting our season. That'll be our first pro race. And that's April 28th. And then we'll be doing Chattanooga 70.3. And then May 19th, I think, is when that is. And then I guess we both also plan to do 70.3 Maine in July, and then 70.3 Augusta in Georgia, and that's September. And then we'll probably race another one or two, but we're not sure yet where. So
St. Anthony's is going to be legit competition. I mean, that's such a
iconic,
my God, such an iconic one, but it brings out some really great competition. Excited about that. Like, are you guys, like, you want to be racing the best?
I go back and forth. Like, sometimes I'm like, it would be so cool to see like Paula Finley show up and, you know, the top names in the sport. But at the same time, I'm like, I hope nobody goes so then I can win more money. So, you know, well, I think either way, it's going to be a good first pro race because in my mind, it seems like a little bit lower key, but it really does bring some big names. And so, it'll also be interesting doing an Olympic because we do mostly do 70.3s, but I think it's a good way to start the season and seems a little bit lower pressure because Chattanooga is going to be really competitive being part of the Ironman Pro Series and it's just, you know, it's always really competitive. So, but yeah, I'm getting really excited. I'm going to be extremely nervous, but yeah, I'm hoping some big names show up, but not too many that I can still maybe.
Not too big. Yeah. Olympic distance, Mitch, you're going to be using your, lock it down rowing mental skills because that's just going to be like red line from the gun, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of our work that we've done in training lately has been specific to the distance. Although, you know, a month later, we still have to be prepared for 70.3 Chattanooga. So yeah, I think we're putting kind of all our eggs in the basket to just see if we can put our names out there for the pro debut. And at least I would love to make a statement, just to, again, put my name on like out there. It is exciting and daunting. And again, back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, it's, the unexpected, which is super exciting. It's really in our hands to shape how we want the season to go and how we want our first race to go. So really taking hold of the opportunity and seeing what we can do with it.
Yeah. There's no comfortable blueprint to realize a dream. And not just to realize a dream, but when we realize a dream, it's always so much more. And there's just no way to do that staying in some kind of comfort zone. And the unknown is an absolute requirement of it. And so even though some days, you know, we live it all the time and some days I'm just like, oh, just, you know, we just want like a day off. Like I just like not from training, but just like from life, you know, and like living brave and all this stuff. But But then you look at yourself, and I think you guys are the same way, where you're just like, you can't do it any other way. Like that, you know, we're here for just a glimpse. And so if there's something on your heart, you have to realize it. You have to go for it, whether it gets messy and hard, and it's going to get both of those things, but to keep going anyway. So I want to talk a little bit about like the leap that you guys made, but I'd like to hear both of, you know, from your perspectives, like when did it hit you like, oh, I could do this as a professional, like as a career?
Yeah, I guess I can start. I think for me, I graduated from college and I just walked on like end of junior year for running. And so that kind of brought that competitiveness back to me, I guess. And I was still super hungry for sport, but I had just graduated. And then, you know, I knew I had a swimming background. I loved running still. I was like, how hard can a bike be? So I found a local coach in Lexington, Kentucky, and like a year after graduating or so. And I didn't even know being a professional was a thing. I didn't know anything about it. But I just kind of started from nowhere just for fun. And just to kind of have that, you know, something to shoot for. I always loved having goals and something to train for and that kind of thing. But then I think she is who really started to, once I like showed, I, you know, could actually be kind of good at it, and was progressing quickly. She kind of put that into my mind, like, you know, you could qualify like for your pro card, and started introducing me to that. And she was always like, her name's Erin Rock, just my coach from Lexington, but she was, really, really encouraging. And I think sometimes it just takes somebody like to give you confidence, and then you kind of have that in yourself. And so she put that idea in my mind, and I kind of just like took it and ran with it. And, I still took it. I was training a lot, but I was also working a full-time job, managing a hot yoga studio, teaching there, and then also coaching Orange Theory. So it was like a ton to balance. You know, I didn't have the recovery and everything, but then I eventually moved to Florida, and that's when I was able to, you know, I was working a little bit less and was able to just focus on it a little bit more. And that was still, you know, in the back of my mind, I could do this. And so I took it a lot more seriously. And then it became a little bit more of a reality, especially once I then, you know, I met Mitch, and then he told me about working triathlete. I was like, this is exactly what like I needed, and what I needed to help me like get the ball rolling on this dream. And then we eventually, or yeah, then I went all in. And so that's kind of how it progressed. And that was over, I guess, 4 or 5 years.
Was it a tough decision, or, well, you're still working now, but not as much, I guess. Was it a tough decision to kind of walk into that space and be like, hey, I'm pursuing this thing. I have to cut the cord of a little bit of safetyness here. Was that like an uncomfortable decision process?
Yeah, definitely. Cause you know, right out of college, I was making a whole lot more money than I am now. And, but then I think I just kind of like, I've never been motivated by making a ton of money. I've always been motivated by doing what makes me happy. And I've had parents that really support that and, you know, never put pressure on me to do anything I didn't want to, but I've always been really kind of self-motivated in that way. And I found what I was passionate in really, really early in life, which I feel lucky for too. But again, wasn't super motivated by money. I always just wanted enough to be comfortable and live the way I want to live, but I didn't need excess. And so I think having that mindset helped me kind of let go once I moved to Florida. And then I was still, you know, I was still coaching full time, but so I started coaching Orange Theory more, but then I also wasn't managing a studio and also teaching hot yoga. So it was just like overall a lot less, but, yes, it was uncomfortable to take that leap. But, I think I've always just kind of, yeah, the more I focus on like, just focusing on doing what makes me happy and what I know I want to do. And it seems like everything else just kind of falls into place. Like money just comes, and the less I stress about it, the more like the happier I am, and the more things just start to fall into place. And so I kind of just trusted that.
Yeah. We're laughing because it's seriously like just letting go, just trusting. Just,
yeah.
And it's easy to say letting go. So how do you let go? But it's like, literally, right. you have to work with it. You have to work with that resistance that comes up and begin to understand it so that you can just like, let it all fall into place.
And I think it really, really helps, having something you're extremely passionate about. Like, I think a lot of people get caught up in like, they just don't really have a focus other than, well, I'm supposed to make money or I'm supposed to do this and this. But like, if you really have something that you feel so strongly about and you're just something that makes you really happy, whatever that is, having that as your like purpose helps you kind of, again, make everything just fall into place. Just focus on that and what makes you like brings you true joy. And then everything else just kind of works out truly.
You find a way to make it work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's not to say I'm just like sitting back, not doing anything, like everything's going to be fine. But like, you know, I work really hard, but like at the things that I truly love. And then that's what kind of falls into place, I guess, is what I mean.
Yes. Beautifully said. Mm-hmm. It's like life is challenging. You may as well be doing what you love, or even taking a step back, figuring out what it is that you love,
yeah,
and doing more of that. And yeah, life is going to always challenge you, but you may as well be doing the thing that fulfills you as you're walking through those challenges.
Right. And then the challenges that you overcome doing those are just like that much more rewarding, you know?
Right. And they make you better at doing the thing that you love. Like there's a exactly. recipe here that works, people. It actually works. Like you're not going to totally escape works. Challenge or pain, but you may as well be living where you want to live and doing what you want to do.
You have to take action on it. You can't just dream about it and keep that locked up. Like you can journal about it. You have to actually take action.
You got to take the leap.
Yeah.
You got to take the leap. How about you, Mitch? How did this all evolve for you? And you were like, I could do this. I can do this as a pro.
Yeah. I think the main thing is I had to prove it to myself. I have a lot of people, especially family, that have supported what I've decided to do as far as making this hopefully a profession. They've always supported that idea. So there's never resistance there. I think the biggest thing was, in my own mind, I felt like I needed to live up to some expectations that my family had for me. Being first generation college student and graduating, and I was going to be, I had a job set up in finance and I was going to go in that direction. And I found myself, you know, preparing for that life, and I don't know what it was, but there was just, you know, resistance in my own mind. Like I shouldn't be doing that. I just felt like that wasn't the way to go for me. And I kind of pushed myself away from, you know, going through with that job in finance. And I started coaching back home and started training or continued training, started racing triathlon. And found a little bit of success and, you know, pretty much just jumped into the world of triathlon and researched everything there is about it, looked at the top names in the sport. And of course, you're looking at those people. And to me, it's like, there's no way. I could never be one of the best in the world in triathlon. But over time, I think I've slowly, again, proved to myself that there is a opportunity there. And it was uncomfortable at times just to be training for a race and coaching and still living at home and not really seeing where this is going and where I can find myself in the sport. But it was about a year and a half ago, or maybe around 2 years ago, and I found a coach and started making some progress with that coach and had a good ending to the year in 2022. And then found Working Triathlete last year. And last year's performance was really what kind of was the stamp of approval for myself. And just the progress over the four races and seeing that I'm just at the top of the age group field, and the next jump would be to race professionally. And you know, I reflect on that process and the progress that I've made, and think to myself, like, if I've gone from where I had started to where I ended up last year and where I am now, then, you know, what holds in the future, it's like just going to be that much more. Like you can make it to potentially the best in the world or the best in, you know, triathlon just by doing the work. And again, I think proving it to myself. So yeah, that's kind of been my progress over time and how I've made it to decide to be a pro.
You made a decision that probably made people very uncomfortable. You walked away from a job in finance to live at home and coach and train. And, you know, I've found when we've made decisions that don't make sense, you know, people around us, they still love us. And their comments are coming from a place of love, but they can kind of also be like, what are you doing? Like you're taking all of your financial future and you're just throwing it out the window. Did you have any, like, I guess we'll just use the word backlash when you made that choice, or was it quiet enough where, you know, people didn't really know about it?
I would say it was more indirect. The relationship have with my dad and my mother, it's different in that we're not as much of like heart to heart sort of when we communicate. It's very much like indirect communication. So you could see there was some resistance at times when I'm talking to my parents. And again, there's always that love and support, but there's also the kick in the butt and the push to be like, hey, you need to figure something out, because you can't just live at home and not pay rent and you're gonna have to find your way in life, essentially. So yeah, it was tough at times and uncomfortable. And again, that I always reflect on, like, it was just proving to myself that I can make it in this sport, and I have to commit to it at some point. It was just building the confidence over time, which I certainly didn't have at the beginning, that this is a potential for me. And I think now I'm in a spot where they see that, like, wow, I've had some success, and as their son, they're committed to continuing to support me, but in a different way. It's more relieving, like a little bit different when we talk now, and they understand that this is something that I'm committed to, and that I'm really gonna chase the dream and make this.
They seem super supportive now. You know, yeah. I mean, at least from my perspective, like, they're extremely supportive about what he's doing. Mm-hmm.
And it was always, like, proving to my family that we're capable of something, making a name for our family name. So that was something that was big to me. 'Cause, you know, sister didn't graduate college. Dad grew up in sales, or dad's always done sales. And mom kind of had somewhat jobs here and there. So to me, it was making a name for us and kind of proving something for who we are as a family.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And the confidence comes from evidence, right? So, for you and for both of you and your families, but it starts with the belief. Like, you have to believe that this is possible for you. So you see the stacked field, you see the pros that are out there. Can I even compete? Of course you can. You have to believe it. Everybody has to believe it before you can see it, right? But it does add a little bit of confidence, comfort to know after you see results, and everybody gets on board and they're like, okay, now we can see it. But I'm saying this because it has to start with both of you two. Like, the belief and trust has to start with you. The seeds have to be planted there, and it has to be firmly rooted for you to pursue this and be all in. Like, you guys are both all in. We can certainly see that. And I'm getting thoughts right now of, we did a podcast with Jason West. I don't know if you know Jason West, and how he is now, like, when he was on there, I know he talked about, he, and you guys mentioned it too, I have nothing to lose, which makes me a very, very dangerous athlete out there. I have nothing to lose. And when you have that sense of, like, I don't care if I finish first or last, it doesn't matter. you're very dangerous to your competitors because you just don't know what's going to show up on that day. And I think that's what happens in these professional races is everybody's fit and strong. It's like, who is at the peak right there? Who is mentally engaged in not slowing down in that moment? Even if they're getting past, they hang on to it. So you guys got to keep that belief and trust and faith up because more people are going to get on board. And I love that you're sharing this on a YouTube series. I think you need to continue to do that. And I know training takes priority, of course. but who are some people out there in the YouTube space that you guys look up to or are following yourselves?
So I would say like the TTL YouTube, and we're actually like good friends with Freestyle Tri, Jen and Miguel. I don't know if you've heard of them. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the where I find we're going to end up. I've had a newfound love for documenting what we're doing in our training and just showing people who we are. We're still kind of finding our feet and learning how to really capture that. But yeah, it's only up from here and progressing as far as displaying and showcasing the work that we do and our lifestyle and our dreams. but I do want to touch base and kind of take a step back for 1 second and kind of go back to that belief. And it's like believing in what your aspirations are. And even if you think that at the time, there's no way I could find myself in that position. It's really easy to say like, oh, you just have to believe. And Sam Long has said it, and people like Jason West have said it. And a lot of times they say, you just really have to believe in yourself, but it doesn't have to be like the biggest aspiration and goal. You can start a little bit smaller and just show yourself like, yeah, I can make it to the pool today, even though I didn't feel as great when I woke up. Or like, yeah, I can hit this run splitter or these watts on the bike and just kind of start a little bit smaller, because that compounds over time and can really mm-hmm. bring out the best in the long term. And soon enough, I mean, you'll find yourself in a position where as long as you look back on the progress you've made, you will believe in all your goals and aspirations and truly believe in yourself. It's a big confidence gainer for sure.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Thank you so much for that. It really is true. It's believing in yourself is like, can I go into the kitchen and make myself something healthy for dinner? You know, like all of that builds your belief and your willpower in yourself. Mm. When you were telling your story, Mitch, it reminded me of, I think it was 2017 when we first interviewed Eric Lagerstrom, and he talked about how he left college and he wanted to pursue this. And I think at this time he hadn't even done his first half, like 70.3. And he was just coming off of,
not making it for,
yeah, he didn't make it for the, was it the Paris Olympics or London
2016
Olympics?
2016 was Rio.
That was London.
Anyway.
What
yeah.
was that?
Was that London
Olympics? 2016?
London.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he talked about on that podcast, he talked about how he left school and I think he had some.
It was Rio.
It was Rio.
Right.
It was Rio.
2012 was London.
Yes, I know. I didn't. I was
we
like,
should know this
Helen
stuff.
Jenkins did the London Olympics. I'm like, that was a long time ago. But Eric talked about how there was kind of a gap there between him and his dad as far as like him leaving school to pursue this thing. And but then I don't know if it was in that podcast or another one that we did later on, but then it came full circle, you know, where his dad got on board with, you know, what he was doing. And there was like this kind of mending in the relationship and this belief in what Eric was doing. And, you know, if you look at where he is now and what he's doing and his beautiful, fiance Paula and the life that they've created, I love that when we get the opportunity, like you just gave us all, Mitch, to share kind of these intimate details about what the process looks like, because, you know, it's more than just you. It's more than just you and Caroline. You know, there's people who love you and there's family and yeah, like, you know, first one to get through college, like there was a track there for you and you didn't choose it. You chose your track. And I think that that's such an important message for people, that sometimes you do have to live against the grain. But keep going and keep following those hits, even if they're taking you into the unknown, like just keep going. Cause there's something, like Caroline said, like there's something there for you and you'll see how things begin to line up for you along the way. So thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it. And I'll put a link to that first podcast with Eric, in the show notes for this episode. So how can people support you? We need to get more subscribers on your YouTube. I'm asking the question and then I'm answering it. We need more subscribers on your YouTube channel.
Instagram followers.
We need everybody to follow you on Rise and Try on Instagram.
Go say hi to them at races.
Yes,
at
you, me. Yeah, you give ahead, us you all those handles and tell us how people can support you, because we love you and we just want to keep seeing you guys rise up and shine bright.
well thank you.
That's great. I mean, you covered it all.
Yeah, definitely YouTube, and it's Rise and Try on YouTube with Mitch and Caroline. And then, yeah, our Instagram together is Rise and Try, just Rise _try. Try.
Yeah,
you'll figure it out. And then personally, we have our own Instagram, Caroline _RCAP, and he's Mitch _AOT. So kind of similar that way too. Mm-hmm.
And then, right. Yeah, if you ever see us at races,
yeah,
definitely stop by and say hi. We love the community. We love everything about this sport, and that hopefully we can, you know, shed some light on what we're doing and our progress, and show people that you can make it in the sport if you have aspirations to do so.
Yeah, even if you don't have a background in it, like,
yeah,
you can go all in. Go
exactly.
For it.
So.
Awesome. I love it. And I'm sure at some point in your career, we're going to see you out here at Oceanside for a proper season opener. So we'll have to stay in touch, because we literally live a couple miles from that race. So we're getting pretty excited for it. Not next weekend, the weekend after.
Next weekend.
Yeah. 2 weeks.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's either like the real calendar or the Training Peaks calendar. It's very confusing. Thank you so much, you guys. This was a wonderful conversation. I appreciate everything you shared and your time today. And psyched to know you guys and be connected with you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us. This was fun.
It was great.